Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. My guest today is Mr. John Dealey from the band Northlane, who I think at this point you could call them pretty legendary Australian band. He's a songwriter, guitar player, synth savant, and one of the founding members. And a really, really cool conversation. Keep in mind, April 12th, 2024, this year, they have an EP coming out called Mirror's Edge. Check it out. And let's get into it. John Dealey, welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, good. Good to be talking to you. How's it going?
Yeah, good, man. We're just in between tours at the moment and doing a bit of writing to tide me over, which is going well.
Just you writing for the band or just you writing to write?
No, I'm writing for the band, and it's this specific thing as well. I can't talk too much about it, but it's for a video game, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. So when you write, is it something that, a couple of questions, do you feel like it's something you need to do all the time when you're in writing mode? And does, if you haven't written for a while, do you ever feel like you need to warm up into it?
A little bit of both, actually. I feel like definitely by the end of like a big writing block, and then we like go into the studio and you kind of hit the ground running and you're doing a bit of writing in the studio as well. I find that when I do come home, it's kind of like all the pistons are firing already and things just happen much quicker. Because I think when you, on the flip side, I think if you haven't been in that sort of mindset, which is like pretty, it's pretty like cutthroat, you know, you're throwing away things. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would have just sat on a little bit longer. I think when you're like that, it's things are just a lot slower because you're like, oh, is this right? Is this wrong? Like you just think more about it. So yeah, I think when you are deep in writing, things definitely just sort of happen a bit quicker because you're a little bit more cutthroat on your own material.
You're kind of never better, in my experience, than right after you get done tracking for an album or right after a tour. Like you're just never better than that.
Yeah, that's true.
Though, interesting. I'm curious about this. So when we did our last record, I was so in the zone that I told myself, I'm going to just keep writing after this. It's going to be awesome. But then when we finished, I was so burned out that I had, like, I thought it was literally the day it was over, I just hit this wall where it was like, okay, the adrenaline can go away. I can like rest, and I had nothing to give for a little while. So how do you get around that? Or does that even happen to you?
No, it definitely does. It definitely does. And I feel like fans of Northlane who like the more electronic side, they're always asking me like, oh, when are you going to do a side project? And I'm always like, yeah, it's coming, it's coming. As soon as I'm done with this Northlane stuff, like, oh, I'm going to get stuck into it. Because I do, I have heaps of stuff that I'm working on. But the truth is, like, as soon as I get home, I'm so burnt out. I just kind of want to do nothing. I guess the trick to getting around that is just, like, pretend like whatever you're playing around with, whatever idea or sound you're playing around with to inspire you, you kind of just like pretend like it's not for anything important, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like just play with music and sound for fun, as opposed to being like, this has to be for something, you know?
It's important. I think usually,
yeah, exactly. And like when you're in a writing cycle as well, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you've kind of got this thing in the background that's like, oh, how can I utilize this? How can I maximize this thing? Can I use it in Northlane? And I think when you do that, you put up all of these sort of parameters, which then dictates what you end up doing. So I find like, if you just pretend like it's not for anything, and I know that sounds easier than it actually is, but if you can try to pretend like it isn't for anything important, generally like the walls come down and you can just take it wherever the sort of the part or the song's like trying to take it, you know?
A friend of mine, a dude, Kevin Thrasher, he's a really good producer, guitar player, songwriter, writes for a lot of people. And he was on here and he was talking about something similar, actually, which I really took to heart. He calls it writing for the trash, which is he sits down to write, and basically it's exactly what it sounds like. He sits down and tries to write something that's going to get thrown away, but he does, but he'll do like a new one every day. And
yeah,
you, and it kind of takes away that pressure of this has to be great. You're okay with it sucking. And if you're okay with it sucking, that means that you're going to eventually get to something great and it's going to be organic and not going to be trying. So I tried that. It actually works.
Yeah, definitely does. Because I think we live in a world where like everything has to be perfect. And I don't know if it's, you know, you could say the same thing about, you know, all culture, like film and TV and visual art, like, but the world isn't perfect. And I think especially in like the genre that we play in, it's like very precise. When you go to see the band, most bands these days have like just stems from the album just sort of playing in the background, because they know like the version of this song that isn't perfect is going to suck, you know, like, or it's not going to be that great. So yeah, it's hard to sort of be mindful of that and just try and just remember that everything doesn't have to be perfect, and if it isn't, that's okay. But yeah, for writing, that's super important. It's easier said than done, I feel like, especially yes. if you're like a perfectionist, and which I feel like I am. And you know, at the end of the day, this is like our career. There's people's bloody livelihoods and bills and stuff on the line. Like, it does all matter, but you just need to pretend like it doesn't.
I did something when writing on the last record that actually helped, was I would set timers. So I started doing this thing called the 2-hour song, where it was just going to finish, not finish like the final version, obviously, but like going to finish the bones of a song in 2 hours. And so that forced me to do things like not worry about the performance. Like, you could, because you can't do this style of music. You can't write this style of music and play it right on the spot. Like, it just, in 2 hours, it's just not possible. So we just do things like play the riff twice, copy paste left and right, and then just loop it, and just like all, like everything I know about how to work more efficiently, we just do that because you're gonna run out of time. So have to get to the next idea. And it was very fast to be like, okay, this idea sucks, it's gotta go. Like, no thinking about it. Like, is it good enough? Yes or no. If it's a maybe, that's a no, and just write another one. And it really helped a lot. Some of those turned into killer songs. Some of them are total garbage. Some of them, like, you didn't finish the song, but ended up with a really, really cool thing anyways. But it's kind
like
of
a riff or a in a song or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of along the same lines, where there's no way it's going to be perfect in 2 hours. It's just not possible. So you kind of have to, you just got to throw that out the window.
But it's a good way to sort of like, just get the ball rolling and see if this, whatever idea that you think it is, you can kind of like see it a little bit clearer. You can like realize it a little bit sooner. I know that when I'm writing, and I try to sort of do that sort of stuff, I mean, that's how I write anyway. Like, when I'm coming up with ideas, I'm not trying to play them perfectly. I do the exact same thing. I just slap them left and right. I don't even quad track. Like, sometimes I'll do that if it's like a part that, like an affected part that really needs some juice. But that's the funny thing, because when I go into the studio and like in the demo phase, I came up with something that just like, I don't know, my hands just bumped a string, created this weird harmonic that now I cannot recreate. I have no idea how I did it. And like, you know, like Will Pani or like Chris Mancato, who we track with, they'll be like, why don't you just, we'll use the DIs. And I'm like, I'm not recording DIs. I'm not doing any of that. And even if I was, the guitar's definitely out of tune. It's like, I definitely like fumbled all of these things. So, I mean, in a perfect world, I would be doing all of those things, but it's not really important. I don't think it's as important. It's more important to sort of just like keep the juices flowing and the ball rolling, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, when do you know that you're done writing a song? Like, how do you know?
I can hit play and listen to it from start to finish, and nothing bothers me.
Okay, that's a good,
Yeah.
it's a good test.
But from like point A to point B, there are a million things that will bother me, you know? Like, so it's just combing over those things. And generally when you, I guess, so yeah, I guess like you need to have an ear for, I don't mean this is subjective as well, but like you just need to have an ear for what the song's sort of calling for. And if there's a bit that bothers you, like, okay, so why is that bothering me? And then you're like, okay, I think it's this element in the song, or it's this note in a riff. And then sometimes that actually opens up these other lanes of like problem solving. It might actually open up this whole other version of a riff maybe that you didn't even know was there. And then you're like, actually, that's better than the thing I came up with originally. And like, I'm gonna put that all through the song, you know?
Totally. So, just out of curiosity, I know that you just said there's like a million things it could be. So, just off the top of your head, first things that come to mind, what are some things when you're listening back to a song that would bother you? And I'm asking this for it for listeners who are trying to write songs who have not been in the studio with some high-powered producer who, because for me, that was one of the first times that I like I've always been critical, but it wasn't until I worked with the first like real deal producer that I learned just how critical is. And I feel like until you've done that, you
You're kind
don't
of just
know.
shooting in the dark a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you just don't know how intense they are, that is. So just now that you've done that a bunch, I'm sure that the list of things that you notice are way more than at the beginning. So I'm just curious, what just off the top of your head, what are some of those things
Yeah.
that bother you?
For me, there's two things that really I'd look for, which is like, let's say you've got this part that you really love, but when you listen to it in the context of the song, like is it in the same world as the rest of the song? Does it serve a purpose? Is it, you know, I feel like back in the day in our early stuff, I would write all of these technical parts and just sort of smash them together. And then you wouldn't have any identifiable moments in the song, which is cool. Like sometimes if you're going for like a journey style song, that's fine, and I still do that from time to time. But generally I'm like, okay, is this random in context of the song? Another one is like the transitions. Like even if you have the coolest riff that you've ever written, and then it goes into the next coolest riff that you've ever written, if the transition isn't right and it doesn't flow right, then there's a problem there. So then you have to look at like the ins and outs of the each riff, you know? I feel like the flow of a song is like super important to me. Even if you had like a handful of average riffs, the way that they connect and sort of speak to each other, I think is like a super, super important thing to be looking at.
Absolutely. Do you ever listen for or try to pay attention to when you zone out while listening?
What do you mean,
What
signing
I
out?
mean is I try to think about how much it keeps interest over time. Like, do we get to 2 minutes and 15 seconds and I'm always like just thinking about something else by the time it gets to this point in the song, or am I still invested?
Yeah.
Yeah, where does my mind start to wander? And I realize I have a different relationship with it than a listener, but all I've got is me. So I will listen to things from the beginning. So it kind of works for testing transitions too, because sometimes you don't really know if a transition works until you hear it in the full context.
The whole song, yeah.
Yeah, and so at that point, I start to also listen for, am I getting bored? Like, am I still in it when the verse kicks in? Am I still in it for the second verse? Or when the last chorus comes in, do I want to just skip because I've heard it? Or like, is this last chorus actually sicker than the rest?
I think,
That shit drives me crazy.
yeah, I think it's like when you're going in on a section and you're trying to sort of iron out the nuts and bolts of it. And sometimes you can spend like 30, 45 minutes going over like this very small section of a part of a song. I usually will just be like, okay, let's just go back, let's just start it from the start, and we'll just listen right up to that bit and just see how we feel. Because I think you can lose perspective when you zoom so far in on something. And often, like I've spent so long on a thing, and I'm like, I think that's right. And then I listen to it in the context of the song, and I'm like, this shouldn't even be in this song. You
Yep.
know, like.
How did you learn to differentiate between this whole, like, I'm proud of this because it's a technical thing that's impressive, versus that's cool, but it doesn't fit the song. How did you, that's a tough step for people to take, like, where they, I guess they get to that point where they can easily just be like, I worked on this part a long time, cut it, whatever. So how did you make that transition?
I think it just comes with just writing more and more songs over time. Like you realize that not everything that you're working on has to be in whatever song you're working on at the time. Like we have all the time in the world. You can write another song. So if it's not serve if a thing that you're working on is not servicing the rest of the song that you're working on, like just stick it in another song. Maybe like it doesn't have to be trashed, but it might work better in something else, you know. And I think there have been times where like I've written things and I'm like, well, I don't think this is gonna work in this song. And then I remember there's like another session that I did where I had this exact same thought. And I'm like, okay, but that's in a different tempo. Oh, well, maybe it'll work in a different tempo. Maybe it's in a different key. Maybe it'll work in a different key. And then you just sort of like, I use Ableton. So I don't know, maybe other DAWs have this ability, but basically within Ableton on the left-hand side, there's a browser and you can go through all of your sessions without actually opening them. So I can go to an old session, kind of open it up, see the tracks that are there, and I can just drag and drop like a stem from another track straight into this session and it'll just like warp it to the same tempo that I'm currently working in, which enables me to sort of just like flick back and forth and try different things from different sessions.
How does that work if you have changed the structure of the song?
Well, it doesn't really work with that sort of stuff. It's usually like, I'll be dragging in parts of songs. It'll be like, okay, this riff might not be good for here, or this like synth thing that I've made might not be good for that. I'll just open it up. I'll just open up the browser and be like, okay, what was that thing that I was thinking of? I'll just look at that and drag it in as a part, as opposed to like trying to map it to the whole song.
Got it. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I can't think
It's
of
kind of an understated feature in Ableton, I feel like, the
that's a great
browser.
feature.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like some expert Pro Tools user is going to correct me. So I don't know Cubase well enough, even though everyone I work with uses it. I've never heard one of them talk about that feature in Cubase, and I have never seen that feature in Pro Tools, not the way you're describing it. And I've heard people refer to Ableton as a very writer-friendly DAW.
It is, yeah. It's kind of simplistic and sort of caveman-like, the fact that you can just be like, oh, I have this thought, and you just click a thing and you just drag it in from another session.
That's
And
so awesome, though.
in Ableton 12, the one that just came out, they have this feature. I think it's AI, I'm not quite sure, but I can have like a guitar, let's say it's like a clean guitar part that I'm writing for a song. And because Ableton is, it has my whole hard drive sort of just in the background, right? It has this new feature where you can click this button and it will look through every single WAV file that you've ever recorded, and look for other files that are similar to that. So it looks at the tone, the
Dude.
timbre. It looks at the key. It looks at like, is it a guitar? Is it a piano? Like, it's pretty impressive.
So for a metal band, it would find every single riff ever written
Yeah.
by the band. It's looking for
Well,
shit in the same key.
I thought it would, because I have like a sample library that I've just been sort of building up over time, samples that I've bought, and I thought it was just looking at that stuff, but actually it's looking through all of my sessions as well. So
That's amazing.
I was looking for another synth sound that sounded similar to this synth that I was working on, and it was pulling up all of these clean guitars that just happened to be in the same key from like years ago. It's crazy.
And did you find anything useful?
No. I ended up just abandoning that whole idea, but it came really close. If I was looking for a guitar, it could have found like another lead or something from like an earlier album that they could have pulled up.
Yeah, or like we were just talking about, a part that got scratched from another song because it didn't fit, but might still be good
Exactly.
and might still fit with, because when you write a lot of stuff at the same time,
Yeah,
I've
you forget.
noticed you can mix and match it.
Yeah. It's still in its early days, I think, that sort of part of the software, but it's pretty promising where it's going to go, I think.
I'm sure. Well, that's really, really cool. I'm now curious about trying Ableton.
Yeah.
It's really well known for electronic music. How does it
Yeah.
work on the metal side of things?
Well, it's the same thing. Like you pull up a MIDI track, you throw a instance of, Superior Drummer or GGD or something on there, and it's the same piano roll that you see in every other door. The only difference is really like the user interface, the browser that I mentioned before, some of these new features with the I don't even know what you call it, the AI sort of referencing other material that sounds similar. I guess the other thing that maybe is different about it is in Live 12, the new one, they've got this MIDI tools feature, which enables you to sort of like generate MIDI by setting parameters. So you could technically, like, you could record your guitar, you could record every note on your guitar. Let's just say, for example, like the top string, if you're trying to come up with some single note riff thing, you could record that, put all of the samples together into a sampler or like a drum rack of some kind, and then you could use these MIDI tools, set the parameters to only be like between 0 and 12, the 12th fret, let's say, and generate riffs using MIDI. And you can just keep clicking generate, and it'll just come up with different variations of the same thing. Same thing if you came up with a riff and you were like, oh, it's close, but it's not quite right. You can like select a portion of what you're working on and just say, just generate in that spot. So I don't think any other DAWs are doing that stuff yet, the MIDI side of things. You could use it for bass, like VST bass instruments. You could use it for, Superior Drummer kits and stuff like that.
And I
It's pretty
imagine
cool.
that the recording side of things is just like any
It's
other
the same.
DAW. Yeah.
The same. Yeah. In actual fact, I feel like Ableton was a little bit behind in that regard for a long time. Things like what I was saying before about recording a DI and like an amp sound, it took them a long time to be able to link those two, because if you're like making adjustments, you want it to do to both.
Oh, yeah.
Forever to do something as simple as that. Take lanes as well, like where you set up a loop and you just like record the same part over and over and over again. Now it's like every other DAW where it just sort of makes it just keeps making tracks, just keeps making like instances of it, and then you can comp the part, like the ideal part that you want, things like that. I know Logic and I think Pro Tools as well have had that for years, so
Yeah,
able
that's the
that's
reason
what
that I kind of stayed away from it, was because it was kind of lacking. It's kind of like
and
if
stuff,
look, one end of the spectrum, you have Pro Tools that was always lacking in all those types of features. And then on the other end, you had Ableton, which had all those features, but was really lacking in the recording, on the
yeah,
recording side of
definitely.
things. So that's kind of why I just stayed away from it. But it sounds like, just like Pro Tools has added a bunch of them, it sounds like Ableton also have made the decision to get with it with the recording side of things.
And I mean, Ableton has the it's like a its own version of Elastic Audio in Pro Tools, where it's sort of like you could record a drum, you could record drums, and then it looks at the audio, looks at the BPM, and it warps it based on different algorithms. I'm sure all these other DAWs have it now as well, but for a while, Ableton also had an algorithm that was not based on beats. It was like, it's called Complex, so you could use it for vocals and things like that. It would kind of just like see the transient, assume that's meant to be like at this point on the grid, and just nudge it slightly, and it sounds very real. Doesn't sound like it's been stretched at all, and you can get quite dramatic with it as well, and it sort of keeps all of the formants and stuff intact. I'm sure they all
Sounds
do that stuff, though.
different versions of it, but yeah. So that's good to hear that they've added like the I guess the meat and potatoes DAW stuff.
Yeah, if you were still interested to try it, I feel like now is probably the best time to do it, because it kind of has everything now.
After this conversation, yeah, so I'm pretty interested to try it. It just sounds like really cool, really
It sounds like
cool.
I've worked for
I know they've
Ableton, honestly. This is not a sponsored
Yeah, I don't know anyone there.
podcast.
You can invoice them tomorrow. So why, in your opinion, different topic, why are so many metal bands boring live?
Why are they boring? Look, I don't know if they're all boring, but I think for me, a
Well, not
long time.
all.
No, obviously. But I think for me, there was just a period where I felt like I'd kind of heard everything. I'd heard everything that had been done, and then I sort of started falling in love with electronic music. And you know, they're both very different, but also there's some subgenres of electronic music that draw these huge parallels between them. And I think there's subgenres of electronic music that are quite intense. Like, they're obviously electronic, but when you hear them, they're kind of like seismic, dark, intense. And I'm like, well, that could be harnessed in metal, you know, that same sort of intensity. So I think, I don't know, to answer your question, like, I just feel like metal and rock have been around for so long. It feels a little bit exhausted. Like, it feels like it's looking for something to spice it up. I don't know. I am hearing like all of our sort of musical peers that are doing really well, they're all implementing that sort of stuff now, more of a production side, like electronic drums and synths and pads and stuff. So I don't
Just
know.
more.
Just more of everything.
Well, I've thought about this a lot because, I love metal and have gone to some of the most amazing shows, and then also just gone to shows and just been bored out of my mind. And I think that there are some bands who really focus on a performance, but then a lot who don't. A lot who just think, I'm just going to play my stuff. And that's enough. And actually, in some cases, it is enough.
I
So,
think we recorded when we didn't record with them. When we went on tour with, you know, Carnival. When
Great
we
band.
toured with Carnival, love Carnival. When we toured with Carnival in like 2014, I want to say, 20 the year before, we just put out our second album, Singularity, and we were still sort of like, you know, it was on the we were on the up then. And so like we were still playing floor shows and stuff that were like mental, you know, like. And we went into that tour with that same mentality of just like, we just need to go crazy and just do all of this sort of active physical behavior on stage with our instruments and stuff. And Carnival aren't like that. They do get into it, obviously, but they're very much they're playing the music perfectly. That is primary objective, and their fans wanted that. And like very quickly we realized, okay, we need to not grow up a little bit, but we just need to shift our priorities for this tour. And instead of like doing some crazy headbang thing here, let's just get this bit tight, you know? So I feel like that was the first time where we really felt that. We really felt that moment where it's like, these people don't care if we're like getting into it or not. They just want to hear music played really well.
Well, you know, I think that it's this myth that running around a lot makes your show better. There's some bands where the physical stuff does make a difference if that's like their thing, like Dillinger Escape Plan, for instance, like their whole thing was insane. And so breathing fire and throwing chairs and all that shit, and then playing that stuff while doing that, it fits. It fit. I feel like they would have been boring if they were just standing there, but it was just, even though I like their music,
It's a spectacle. It
well,
became like
the
part of
music,
their yeah.
sorry, go, I cut you
No, I was just gonna
off.
say, no, you're so fine. That was like part of their musical identity, I
Yeah.
feel like.
It's almost like that kind of music is so obscure and strange that it would be hard to take in
If they
if they
weren't
weren't.
also acting strange.
Yeah, they weren't breathing fire, basically. But I have seen also, like, you know, Opeth, for instance. I think they're great live, and they're basically just about playing that stuff. I mean, do you want them to do anything else? I don't. I'm happy to
Enjoy
just enjoy it. Yeah.
music. Definitely. I think we're somewhere in between that, where we and for different shows, like if the energy is really high, then it's like really palpable, we will dig a little bit deeper into the physical stuff. But if it's like, I don't know, some obscure place in Europe and they're just standing there, that you can tell they just want to hear it. So you're like, all right, let's just dial it back a little bit and let's just nail this shit, you
Yeah, give them the energy they're giving you, kind of thing.
know?
Well, it's interesting because I think that sometimes a band can misread a crowd by thinking that if the crowd's not going crazy, that they're not enjoying it.
That's so true.
That yeah, it doesn't. I mean, in some cases, it might mean they're not enjoying it, but there are some spots where it's just not in their culture to go crazy. And it's more just a stand and watch crowd, and they're liking it just fine.
We definitely like feel that a little bit because I would consider us like a bit of a niche band. There are definitely parts of the world which they just are always going crazy. And then there are parts, like you said, that just want to stand there and listen. And I feel like when we do have those sorts of shows, I walk off stage and I'm like, well, I played pretty good, so I'm happy with that. But I'm like, but did they enjoy it? No, they didn't go crazy. Well, I don't do that when I go to a show as a 33-year-old.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not in the middle of the mosh, like throwing my arms and stuff around. So, but then I'm like, on the flip side, I'm like, but you would say that to yourself.
Man, the voices are so brutal. The voices will they all mine always have a way to make me feel bad. They'll just like no matter what I say, that voice will find a way
Find a
to
way.
Yeah, it'll find a way. So when you guys play in Australia, man, I've seen clips of your live show. It's kind of insane.
We'd like
So
to go in on it, yeah.
am I understanding correctly that you program that stuff? So is that something that you kind of just learned as you went, kind of like maybe I'm just going to guess here and tell me if I'm wrong, or right, but like probably started learning how to like program basic light show.
I'm not doing the lights, but I am working with a time code file and I go back and forth with the lighting guy.
So what are you doing?
So I will, this is like a relatively new thing in the last couple of years, but I will sort of figure out the start and end of the set and then sort of work out the flow, sort of BPM wise, kind of how I want the energy to sort of travel over time. And then I will figure out ways of blending the songs together. So when you come see Northlane now, It's like if you would go to see like a DJ or something, there's like not really any pauses in between songs. Everything sort of, it's like one big experience. There maybe will be like one or two pauses. We put them in just as like a fail safe. So if something goes wrong, we can kind of wind back and keep going again. But it's also a moment for Marcus to sort of like engage with the crowd a little bit. We're not one of those bands that, once we get into the zone, we kind of just want to stay there. So stopping and starting kind of pulls us out a little bit. So I'll build the set and figure out the flow and join all of the songs together, which is like, it's a pretty tedious thing, but it's kind of this new thing that I really enjoy because it kind of, when you hear the end of a song that somebody knows really well and you put it into another song, like the tails of it or some layer from the song before into the song that's coming in, it sort of like recontextualizes it and you hear it in this new way. And that's like really enjoyable for me as like, I don't know, the person who wrote the stuff. And then once that's all done, we'll sort of like rehearse that. And in parallel, I'm working with the lighting guy and the production team. If they've got like pyro and stuff like that, I'll literally sit here with a microphone and be like, pyro in 3, 2, 1, and then line all of those things up. They're like cues. And then yeah, we put it onto the laptops and make sure everything's like firing on time. But yeah, I work with a time code file that our lighting guy, and we'll just talk to each other and be like, okay, at this point, something like this needs to happen here. Yeah.
And when you say that there's no pauses, this is like literally no pause, like it'll go into the next song as if it's the next section of the same song.
Basically, like sometimes it's drawn out. There was a version when I first started doing this sort of stuff, Marcus was very quickly was like, this is really hard. There's like there's no time for me to like catch my breath or like have a drink or something. So now we sort of like will have longer, I guess you could call them like interludes and stuff. And we'll just like, because we don't need to tune or we're using Evertunes, we'll just sort of like
Love
noodle over
those.
the stuff. We'll just noodle over it. To keep people sort of engaged. But yeah, it's, I don't know, there's something about the pause that kind of just, I don't know. I don't need to hear, I can see the feedback in the people's faces and stuff. Like I don't need to have a round of applause after every song. I just kind of want to give people the experience, you know?
Yep. I that's one thing I actually really like about Korn when I've seen
Oh yeah.
them live. It's just song, song, song.
Yeah.
Like he's such a great frontman. He barely says anything to the
Yeah.
crowd. Maybe there'll
Yeah.
be like one or two spots where he says like a sentence, but it's just song after song after song. It's just pulverizing and awesome.
I think when you do that too, like if you have an hour or like an hour and 15 or something, and if you've been a band for 10 plus years or something, you kind of want to give the fans as many songs as you can give them, you know? So if you're taking like six pauses, that's probably like two songs or like one and a half songs or something, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I guess the deeper your catalog goes, the more of a risk you run of somebody feeling
They missed out on
like they
something.
missed out or disappointed or they're that dis and I guess that there's more and more songs that are important to each individual fan. So,
It's hard. It's a balancing act, really.
with the video side of it, where does that come from? Like, do you
Like the
hire,
content?
yeah, the content itself, yeah, like, is that made for the shows?
Yeah. So every time we like write and record a song, if it ends up being in a set list, we usually will get, we'll reach out to somebody and get them to make content for it. The guy that we've been using at the moment, his name's Third Eye Visuals. He does stuff for Parkway and Alpha Wolf and stuff. He does music videos as well. He actually did a video for Carbonized, which is off Obsidian, our second last record. He's pretty good. He's pretty good at what he does. I would
It
like to get into that sort of stuff, though.
visual like animation or video
Yeah.
editing.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience with it at all?
Look, I used to edit videos and I used to use After Effects and stuff when I was a teenager, but I haven't for a very long time. But I just think if I could do it, I would probably spend the same amount of time that I do on the music and just like really dial it in, you know?
Like do it for
Because no
real.
one's gonna, yeah, like no one's gonna, or just for Northlane, like, because like no one's gonna give a shit about it as much as you know?
No, they won't. I have to type in my third eye visuals. That sounds
Yeah.
so familiar, and I feel like I'm being a dick by because I, but God, I know them.
He's an Aussie guy.
Yeah, it just sounds so familiar. Like I feel
I
like
think he's
I'm,
done like the last couple of Parkway music videos as well.
yeah, I feel like I spoke to him at some point. I don't know, probably. But I now have his in my search history, so now I can go back. But yeah, so do you ever worry that taking on things like you just said would take away from the main thing of like writing and playing?
Well, no, look, I'm not doing that stuff yet. And even if I was doing it, like I would give it all the equal amounts of time. I think the music and the writing definitely is priority number one. But there are like portions of time where we're not touring, the album is done or the EP is done. I could be working on stuff like that. It probably save us a bit of money as well. But I think for the most part, it would just be like, yeah, bringing the whatever vibe I had when I was writing that song into the visual, as opposed to sort of like some other artist interpreting the music and coming up with a visual. Yeah.
Because they'll never interpret it. They'll never be able to feel what you felt when you
Yeah.
were coming up with it. That doesn't mean that they won't come up with something cool, but if you're trying
Exactly.
to convey the actual, like the actual feeling,
Feeling on the whole thing, yeah.
who else can do it? So.
Yeah. But generally speaking, like most of the time I am a bit strapped for time. So it is sometimes better to sort of just like, you know, move that off your plate and be like, somebody else do this, because yeah, I'm burnt out.
Well, I think there's this balance you kind of have to learn to s basically with anything, like whether it's a band or running a company or anything where you are passionate, it's like your thing, and there and you kind of have a vision for all the different aspects. But in all reality, it once it gets to a certain point, you can't possibly do all of it. And I've seen entrepreneurs, and I've also seen musicians just like kind of fuck up by not relinquishing control over certain things that it's like there's some things you should never relinquish control over, but that means that there's some things you're going to have to relinquish control on.
I think it's important. I don't think we should be taking on everything. But even now, like I'm working on this track for this game and I'm gonna be mixing it and mastering it likely. And it's sounding really good, but I've never actually done anything like that for Northlane before. We've always sort of just like once the writing's done, we just sort of put it onto the producer's plate basically, or like the engineer's plate. We just say, you just fucking deal with it, you know? But same thing with the visual thing we were just talking about. There's certain things, certain ways you want like a part to hit and connect with your eardrums, and sometimes that gets lost when it gets transferred to the other brain, you know? So I think stuff like that I would like to try and do more of, because I have such a specific like list of things that I want to happen, and if it doesn't make me feel that and it gets lost in translation, then I think I've stuffed up somewhere. For the most part, it's usually okay. But yeah, I would like to be able to do that for us because I know what I want to hear, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the thing is, you work with a really great mixer like Will. We just had Jens Bogren do our last one. It's like dudes like that are so good. Anything they do, whether it's true to your vision or not, is going to be great. It's like objectively going to be great. And so then the question is, well, is it what I wanted or is it not? And I've always had this thing of, if it's not, am I just being a diva? Because this is expensive. Am I being a diva bringing this up because it sounds fucking great? Is it just in my head or is it a real thing? And, I've gone back and forth about it, but I have enough friends who have decided to just learn how to mix, who have also worked with just amazing, amazing mixers. And that doesn't mean that they mix every single time once they learned how, but it means that they definitely have been able to get a lot closer what vision they have.
Yeah, totally. And I think with the producer aspect of it, it is really important to sort of bring in someone at some stage that isn't so emotionally attached to a thing,
Yes.
that can just look at things objectively and be like, this bit's shit, or this bit is great, but you could maybe like add a little bit of interest here, especially with vocals and things like that. Getting somebody that didn't write the lyrics to sort of
Yeah.
just like listen to it and be like, this doesn't even make sense to me. I mean, it might make sense to you because you have all of these other like sort of subconscious processes happening in the background that make it make sense to you, right? But to me, as a listener listening to it objectively, like I don't get it. And maybe there's a and by going through that, maybe there's like a way of saying it or singing it differently that's gonna make it better for everyone,
I think that's why it's super important that if you're going to bring that person in, bring in someone you trust. I've seen bands bring in producers they don't trust.
Like just big name producers that are just known for making sick
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah. Or no name producers because they wanted to save some money. But in both directions, I've seen it both with like big dogs that they just don't have any chemistry with. And I've seen it with like, the band decided we're going to save some money this time and they just go to someone that's not that good and they don't trust and it never goes well because you can never get around the fact you don't trust their judgment. You got to be able to trust their judgment because if they're doing their job, they're going to bring up stuff that you didn't think of and stuff that might rub you the wrong way. So you have to be able to trust them if you're going to go with it.
That's true. That's true.
Like I would trust Will, even though I've never worked with him. Like I would trust him. He's
Well, we've
just, he's
worked
so
with
fucking
Will a
good.
bunch. And we have a relationship as well, like a personal relationship with him. So I think that's important sometimes as well because if you were working with somebody who you didn't have a personal relationship with, maybe they wanted to say something and maybe they didn't because they weren't sure how you were going to respond. Whereas if you bring in somebody like Will, he kind of just becomes like a sixth member. Like we all have no problem telling each other how we feel about a thing. We realize that it's like nothing personal. And even if you don't have a solution to the problem, sometimes it is just good to flag it. Because then somebody else might be like, you know what? I was actually feeling that too. Maybe we should look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple questions because we're starting to run out of time. We haven't talked about guitar at all. So
Sure.
quick questions about guitar. In your opinion, what do you think you should focus on coming into the guitar game? We're trying to do the guitar game for real, meaning like say you want to either join a metal band or have your metal band go places. Like what should you focus on, rhythm or lead?
I think they're both equally important, but I feel like the groove is so important to me. I feel like I'm more I have more of a love for rhythm, like having the the guitar and the bass and the kick drum all synchronize together to sort of like push as much air into people's ears. But that also might just be because I don't feel like I'm a very technical lead guitarist either. And I think I just sort of found my spot where I'm the most comfortable. But yeah, the lead, I think the lead is equally as important.
I agree that they're equally as important, but I feel like you can't play good leads if you don't have good rhythm.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And I rarely will be coming up with a lead first and then writing the backbone, after that. I don't think that has ever happened.
Yeah, exactly. And man, I've met guitar players. I've recorded a few who wrote a solo without.
Wow.
Let's just say that I remember them because of how fucking weird those sessions were. It was so divorced from reality. They were very strange sessions where, like, I just had this guitar player who hired me to like produce and mix him, and he came in, and as it turned out, he had solos written, but not really songs. And it, I mean, that's a, I've only encountered this 2 times, and but like, it's the extreme version of what you just said, and it just doesn't work. There's it just doesn't work. It's
I
crazy.
mean
It's insane.
the lead is like, if you don't have context, like what is it?
Exactly. I mean, you can write a melody without the backbone, but once you go too far into guitar lead specific, it gets a little strange. So, what genre do you consider your band?
I guess it's just like it's heavy music, electronically influenced heavy music. I feel like that's like the most generic, broad, way of describing it.
It's a good way to put it. All right, 6, 7, or 8 strings.
I think seven is the perfect amount. I feel like I could go back to six. But every time I pick up a six string now, it kind of feels like a toy. Your hand like gets very accustomed to the extra height of the neck, I feel like. Anytime I've ever gone back to a six after spending time on a seven, it just feels so strange. And the same thing to be said about the scale as well. Going back to like regular scaled guitars, like non-baritone scale guitars, same thing. It feels like a toy.
It does kind of. So real
I wouldn't
amps.
do eight.
Sorry, go.
No, I don't think, I think eight is too much. I don't think you need that extra two top strings or the extra two bottom strings. I think you can kind of do it all with a seven.
You can. I mean, I got it 8 recently-ish, just to see what it was like. And it's cool. It's cool. Like, you can do cool stuff with it. But is it necessary? I don't think so. But at the same time, you can come up with some really cool stuff with it. I think the trick is to not treat it like an 8 string. Like, treat it like a 6 or a 7 with just extended range at the bottom or something.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, I feel like if I did have an eight string, that's kind of how I'd be using it. It would be like you'd be able to sort of add more color in those highest and the thinner strings in chords and stuff like that.
Oh, so you would go up higher?
I would keep the thicker strings the same and then
Interesting.
just keep adding strings beneath it so that when I did chords, I guess they would sound like more lush or something like that.
That is interesting. I haven't thought about doing it that way. Now I'm going to just try that.
Well, without tuning, I think the reason probably why I think that is because without tuning, we tune, and this was a way of us back in the day playing our old stuff and incorporating this F string at the top. But it's kind of like you have a normal six string drop tune guitar. So on our F guitars, it's like drop A sharp, basically. And then the top string is an F. So you look at it like F A
By
sharp,
top, you mean
F
the
A
low.
sharp,
By top, you mean the low string.
the thickest string. So you have like F A sharp, F A sharp. So you actually have twice the amount of like octaves that you can play with riffs and stuff like that. So if we do chords, we'll sometimes use it as a normal six string, playing the six as power chords. But then you can also play bar chords on the top three. So if I was to hold the like an like a bar chord at the 12th fret, it's F A sharp F. And so it has a slightly different sound. I think if it was in a standard style tuning, like not dropped, it would kind of be the equivalent of would it be a triad? It's basically a tri. It's basically a tri. Like 12, 14, 12. You know, but you're holding it just barred. It has a different sound. And then when you do that, when you add more strings underneath that, like if you were to hold 12, 12, 12, and then 14, that 14 adds this whole. It gives like the whole chord like a different context. It's definitely changed the way that I write music, because now I know that there is this whole other type of chord that I can engage with that normally would have probably been a weirder shape with my hand if it was tuned standard.
Interesting. I'm gonna check that tuning out. On seven, I'm using GC GC FAD.
So similar.
Similar, but I'm trying to. I feel like so yours is drop tuned though, on the low on the lowest four strings. It's drop tuned across the whole thing. So with GC GC, it's like standard on the low two lowest and then drop.
That's different. It's different in that way. And we have a D sharp guitar as well, which is even more extended. It's a 29 and a half inch scale.
Oof, wow.
And it's cool. It's kind of like it definitely forces you to write in a certain way. Like there's things that like shreddier sort of stuff that I just can't do on it, that I would be able to do quite easily on the baritone. It's only like what, an extra 2.5 inches or something, but across the frets, like those frets just get wider and wider, you know what I
Oh, it
mean?
adds up. So I see why you're saying that you wouldn't need the eight because you're kind of getting to the same pitches that you would be tuning an eight
Anyway.
to. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, last thing I'm wondering is, do you have anything really cool coming up that you're excited about?
Probably the game, probably this track. We got asked about it recently. I'm not able to say any names or anything like that, but it's the first time that Northlane's ever written a track that's going to be integrated into the game, not like, 'cause we did Clockwork, which is for Rainbow Six. That was kind of just used as like promotion for the game. This is like integrated into the game, so we're pretty excited about that.
And are you having to write it the way that with like cues and changes, like,
Basically, yeah, like
okay.
different energy sections and stuff like that. There was a brief that I had to sort of write to.
That's awesome. It's like a whole other world.
I've been waiting for something like that, because I'm a gamer as well, so I love that world. But yeah, and we have some other new music as well that we're writing at the moment, which I don't know when that will be out. But I guess the other thing is, if I can get my mixing chops up, we might not have to wait as long to put music out, you know? Like if there's just a song ready to go, we could just release
I
it.
can give you a URM membership if you want. If you don't have one, I'm happy to
Sure.
hook you
Oh, well,
up.
wait, what is that?
Nail the Mix URM, that's my company. If you want to, I mean, if you want to learn how to mix, can
Yeah, hell yeah. That'd be
definitely hook
great.
you up with that.
That'd be awesome, man. Thank you.
That is definitely a way to really, really speed up you're mixing. So
Hell yeah.
awesome, man. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on. Congrats on doing the game. That is really, really cool. And I hope you have a great rest of your, I don't know,
Day.
more day. Okay. All
Morning,
right.
day, yeah.
Yeah, it's trippy to think about. Awesome, man. Well,
Thank
thank you.
you. Thank you, man.